Hello, I'm Merritt Schneider. Welcome to this podcast of articles from the Wall Street Journal, a presentation of AIRS LA. You are listening to this recording, which is provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's first article is titled 20-somethings are taking up grandma's favorite hobbies by Anne Marie Alcantara. We'll follow that up with Betsy McKay's colorectal cancer is now biggest cancer killer for people under 50. Alvin Woodward wrote, your brain ages in distinct stages, research shows. And then we have a few more. Nicole Ault wrote a very timely article, New York City robs kids of a snow day. Elliot Penn has, life is too short for frequent flyer miles. And we'll follow that up with Christopher Arbacy's, my marital clash over expiration dates. All these articles are from recent editions of the Wall Street Journal. So let's begin with today's first one. 20-somethings are taking up grandma's favorite hobby. Young Americans are skipping middle age entirely. 20 and 30-somethings are exchanging their doom-scrolling for needlepoint, journaling, and other hobbies that require more than just thumbs or a thumbs up. Dubbed granny core or grandma hobbies, these pre-tech pastimes are surging, creating jarring scenes of young adults in knitting circles and bonding over sweaters and scrapbooks. People who are adopting these activities say they were looking for ways to digitally detox and slow their roll. Some say they were surprised by how much they enjoyed hobbies they assumed they were decades away from picking up. Monse Bolanos doesn't know exactly how she got into junk journaling, a hybrid of collaging and scrapbooking. The 22-year-old elementary school librarian assistant said she felt the gravitational pull of pursuits like crafting, baking, and reading as a way to change the pace of her life. Now she's immersed in a world of young grandmas. It's nice to know that even if work, school, or whatever feels super stressful, I can go home and co-play a 70-year-old retiree, said Bolanos, who lives in the Detroit area. It helps when there's an entire side of the internet that partakes in the same hobbies that it helps me find even more grandma-y hobbies to do. Minya Ghani, a 26-year-old community psychology researcher in Brooklyn, has made crafting a daily exercise after leaving a stressful job last fall. I felt like I had too much time taken away, she said. I was not doing anything creative. She's knitted a sweater vest and a winter hat. She's junk journaled about a trip to Scotland and London using cutout letters and maps, and recently made a summer bucket list decorated with a red gingham background and a piece of an ice cream cup. These experiences are really offering something they cannot get online, said Roselli Alano, head of community and trends expert at Eventsbrite, a global events marketplace. The company's data show events around scrapbooking and junk journaling doubled between 2023 and 2024. Cross-stitch pattern sales are up 89% as of May 2025 compared with the year before, while needlecraft canvas sales are up 88% in the same period, according to Shopify, an e-commerce company. In a survey of 2,000 United States adults, 71% had participated in a craft project back in 2024, said research firm Mintel. Among Generation Z, 86% identified as crafters, and 30% had participated in an in-person arts and crafts class. Katrina Stern sees herself as a pioneer of uncool hobbies in her youth. Growing up an only child, Stern picked up embroidery when she was 14 and later moved on to knitting and crocheting. The 36-year-old New Yorker recently expanded her repertoire to include diamond painting, a way to bedazzle a canvas with different colored beads. Her social life now partly revolves around going to knitting and crocheting classes where she met one of her best friends. If all I ever did was the cool thing, I would think that would be a boring life, said Stern, a senior vice president at a public relations firm. I do think some crafters feel the same way. When The Wobbles, a crochet company that offers beginner and more advanced kits, held its four-year anniversary party across 2 days in New York last year, more than 6,000 people showed up. The free event was so crowded that at times there was a 5 to 6 hour wait to get in. At Seville Needleworks, a needlepoint business in Dallas that opened up a store back in February 2025, people can stitch at a community table or come to beginner and advanced classes for $20 a session that sell out. The store also holds a sip and stitch event for $10 for up to 12 people, said Megan Spur, head of marketing and public relations at the store. You can play games or scroll on your phone for a few hours, or you could be spending that time with other people in a fun, welcoming community, said Spur. Needlepoint provides the opportunity to learn something new, be social, and have something tangible that getting to level 6,000 on Candy Crush just does not provide. Lauren Tiloshovsky picked up needlepoint in 2022 as a way to turn off her mind and take a break from her job where she works 70 to 80 hour weeks. The 29-year-old attorney in Atlanta ended up getting her friend interested too. Instead of standing around in a crowded bar, they regularly get together with their needlepoint projects, turn on reality TV or a football game, and talk about topics ranging from politics to Taylor Swift to the latest health kick. It provides an activity for friends to sit in silence together, she said, which I feel like is the hallmark of the most intimate relationships. And now, colorectal cancer is now biggest cancer killer for people under 50. Colorectal cancer is on the rise among young people. Now it is the leading cause of cancer death in the United States for those under 50, according to a new recent analysis. More than 1.2 million people under age 50 died of cancer in the United States from 1990 through 2023. American Cancer Society researchers reported. Some 3,905 people ages 20 to 49 died of colorectal cancer in 2023, according to Cancer Society statistics, compared with 3,809 for breast cancer and 2,086 for brain and other nervous system cancers. This is absolutely disconcerting, said Dr. Madhapa Kanjlandra, Division Chief of Cancer Medicine at Banner MD Anderson Cancer Center in Phoenix, who was not involved in the research. Cancer has long been thought of as a disease of aging. Rising rates of some cancers among younger people, however, have upended the longtime stereotype, worrying health authorities and doctors and triggering research into possible causes and solutions. As colorectal cancer among younger people has emerged as a bigger threat, medical groups have lowered the recommended age for colonoscopies that can detect the disease while there are still good odds for effective treatment. Yet not enough people under 50 are getting the screening, doctors said. prompting calls for a redoubling of efforts to educate doctors and nurses about the need to talk with patients. My kids, for their 21st birthday, they're going to get a colonoscopy, said Josh Herting of Sudbury, Massachusetts, who was diagnosed with advanced colorectal cancer 12 years ago at the age of 34. The cancer had been in his body for 8 years, doctors told Herting, whose father was diagnosed in his 50s with colorectal cancer, although genetic testing did not show a family tie. Herting had surgery to remove part of his colon and 6 months of chemotherapy. Now 46, he has been cancer-free since 2020 and gets colonoscopies every 3 years. Colorectal cancer diagnoses have been rising for many years in young adults, and the disease was already the number one cause of cancer death for men. Now it tops the list for men and women combined, said Dr. Amidin Jamal, the Cancer Society's Senior Vice President for Surveillance, Prevention, and Health Services Research. The increase casts a dark cloud on an improving cancer landscape. Now, 70% of people survive their cancers for at least 5 years after their diagnosis from 2015 through 2021, according to a separate analysis by the Cancer Society. These gains are a result of better drugs and improved detection, according to the Cancer Society. We are making progress, but we have a long way to go, said Jamal, the senior author of the analysis, which was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. In the United States, the cancer death rate overall for people under 50 fell 44% between 1990 and 2023. Deaths from lung, breast, and other major cancers fell. Colorectal cancer deaths have fallen among the United States population overall, primarily due to increased screening among older people. Was the fifth leading cause of cancer death for people under 50 in 1990. Deaths from the disease in this age group have risen annually by 1.1% since 2005. That is now the top cancer killer for younger people means they are being diagnosed at an advanced stage, said Dr. Jeffrey Meyerhart, co-director of the Colon and Rectal Cancer Center at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, who was not involved in this research. If they're presenting with later stage disease, it becomes harder to render them disease-free, he said. 3 out of 4 colorectal cancer patients under 50 are diagnosed at an advanced stage, according to the new analysis. Excuse me. Researchers have associated several risk factors with the rise in colorectal cancer cases, including obesity, physical inactivity, and diet heavy in ultra-processed food. Some researchers are focusing on the gut in their search for causes of rising GI cancers. They're also studying links to these cancers from consumption of alcohol and processed meat and not much fruit and vegetables. The United States Preventive Services Task Force lowered the recommended age to begin screening for colorectal cancer to 45 back in 2021. Screening has improved since then, yet only 37% of people ages 45 to 49 are up to date with their screening, Jamal said. Some develop the disease even younger, and colleges report seeing more patients in their 20s and 30s. Medical groups also recommend that people with a family history of colorectal cancer should be screened starting at 40 or 10 years before the age of diagnosis of a family member. Doctors, nurses, and physician assistants need to be better educated about the rising incidence and symptoms. Kondranja said, symptoms include blood in the stool and abdominal pain, though not everyone has symptoms. Colorectal cancer can progress more quickly in young people, he said. Your brain ages in distinct stages, research shows. The brain goes through five distinct stages between birth and death, a new study shows. Scientists identified the average ages, 9, 32, 66, and 83, when the pattern of connections inside our brains shift. The adolescent phase, they discovered, lasts until age 32. The brain then enters a period of stability until early aging begins at 66. The study could help explain why brain-related conditions arise at certain ages and provide a better roadmap to understanding healthy aging. Maybe there is something going on that is changing within the brain structure, said Duncan Astell, a professor of neuroinformatics at the University of Cambridge and co-author of the study published this past November in the journal Nature Communications. The study's authors examined results from about 4,000 brain scans taken from people in the United States and the United Kingdom, ranging from a newborn baby to a nonagenarian. The scans helped show white matter, a fatty substance that insulates nerve fibers connecting brain regions, so the researchers could see the physical connections that change over time. They also created an average brain for each year of life, Astell said, and used machine learning to help pinpoint moments of significant change in the data. During the childhood period of development, from birth to age 9, the brain grows in size, but because we're born with excess wiring, it prunes connections that aren't used or as efficient, according to Tara Spiros Jones, director of the Center for Discovery Brain Sciences and professor at the University of Edinburgh, who was not involved in this research. During the adolescent stage, between 9 and 32, the brain's wiring becomes more efficient with rapid communication between and within regions. Neuroscientists hate it whenever you say to them, "So, when is the brain mature? When is the brain adult?" Astell said. The really neat thing about this analysis is that it shows when that is. At 32, our brains enter the adult phase, a period of consistency that lasts until 66. This period aligns with a plateau in our intelligence and personality, researchers said, and the regions of the brain become more segregated. Early aging begins after the next turning point. Between 66 and 83, some brain regions form stronger groups, known as modules, but they are less connected to other modules. Past age 65 or so, there's brain shrinkage and decreases in the integrity of white matter, and that corresponds to, for many of us, though not all, a slight decline in some aspects of cognitive function, Spires Jones said. Beyond 83, in the late aging phase, our brains increasingly rely on individual regions with a small number of highly used interregional pathways, said Alexa Mousley, a University of Cambridge neuroscientist and lead author of the research. There is a pattern between the five stages and certain conditions. Most autism diagnoses are made in young children, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Up to 75% of mental health conditions begin by a person's early 20s, for the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Alzheimer's disease typically manifests during what the researchers call the early aging phase. Cardiovascular health, social connectedness, and exercise are all associated with positive cognitive health outcomes, and it's possible they also play a role in the rewiring that happens later in life too, Astell said. There's probably still a lot of individual variation around when these changes happen, said Dr. Katya Rubia, professor of cognitive neuroscience at King's College London, who also was not involved in the study. This does not mean we should all be starting to worry, the moment we turn 83, she added. And now New York City robbed kids of a snow day. As a snowstorm headed for the city, local kids were told that all the rituals to induce a school cancellation would not do them a lick of good. Wear your PJs inside out, flush ice cubes down the toilet, pray, too bad. Monday, just today, is not going to be a traditional snow day, Mayor Zolan Mamdani told New York One on Friday. Should the weather shut down the streets, it will be a remote learning day. What a slip up from the Big Apple's new socialist chief. After the COVID-19 pandemic made remote instruction normal, city officials imposed it on one of childhood's delights by making it the go-to recourse for snow days. Mr. Mamdani could still have opted to give kids a day off, but the state requires 180 days of instruction, and the school calendar, which is negotiated with the union, will not budge. We are very tight on our schedule, said United Federation of Teachers President Michael Mulgrew. So the traditional snow days are gone. He blamed the number of holidays, which run the religious gamut in New York City. Adding a day to the school year is presumably a union puzzle that Mr. Mamdani does not want. Easy to have students log in online and call it a school day. But the decision will find the mayor favor with few. I would like to build a snowman, sled, and drink hot cocoa, one first grader told CBS News New York. In 2024, the last time the city enforced remote school on a snow day, parents expressed their displeasure to the New York Post. During COVID, we did not have a choice, but I swore they would never do remote learning again, said one Upper East Side mother who let her son go play outside. Another mom in Staten Island said, just because we have this technology does not mean we have to use it. The 2024 experiment was a technical disaster. Many families were unable to log on. Service provider IBM blamed a flawed city contract. Besides being a bummer, the policy also disservices education. The cancellation of snow day policy is not in the interest of kids. After the pandemic, we all know that virtual instruction does not work, said the Manhattan Institute's Daniela Agarov in an email. Seriousness about school means ensuring the in-person days happen, not pretending that online school does the job. Virtual school for one day is no huge loss, but it facilitates the pretense that remote school is equal to in-person instruction. It also makes it easier to revert to virtual learning for other reasons. Other states know better. New Jersey also requires 180 days of school, but it does not allow remote school on snow days to count, despite legislative attempts several times over the years to change that. Virtual school days, often utilized for inclement weather, do not adequately meet students' needs, Alaska's education commissioner said in 2024. One of the delights of snow is the surprise of it, interrupting the busyness of life with stillness and beauty. New snow was falling, discovers the little boy Peter, waking up in a wintry city morning in Ezra Jack Keats' The Snowy Day. How many adults, as well as kids, don't feel that same joy? Trust bureaucracy to wrangle a wonderful act of providence to meet the stipulations of union contracts and state law. But perhaps, eventually, Mr. Mamdani can show that this is one regard at least he does not fit this big government mold. And now, life is too short for frequent flyer miles. When a friend who isn't a native English speaker first came to the United States, he would ask me for help understanding how things work here. After a series of conversations covering everything from insurance and car registration to a national park reservation, he threw up his hands in frustration and asked, "Why is it that you need a PhD to navigate everything in America?" His comment opened my eyes to the unnecessary complexity that is ubiquitous in this country. I recall how painful it was to switch wireless service providers and health insurance plans. Each required days of research and interacting with employees who themselves were lost in their product's ever-changing details. I thought of my search for a hotel room during which I was asked to decide between packages with different options for parking, cancellation, floor height, chocolates, yoga, and pet treats. So more complicated than it needs to be. Maybe corporate executives think complexity is good for business. Or maybe through repeated exposure, Americans have been desensitized to the burden that unnecessary complexity imposes on us. Either way, now that I had awakened to this disease, I decided to tolerate it no longer. Whenever possible, I select vendors that make it easy rather than taxing to be their customer. My credit card company recently notified me that my annual fee would be raised to $795, but I shouldn't fret because I'd get thousands of dollars back in benefits. A quick study revealed that managing the benefits would be a part-time job. I shut my account and moved to a card with an reward system that does not require a spreadsheet to track. I now choose airlines with simple ticket class structures, or at least ones whose seating, baggage, rewards, and cancellation rules I've already mastered. For my firm's new office, I selected a building that offers rent, parking, electricity, internet, and gym access at one bundled price. It isn't that I'm incapable of researching policies and figuring out how to optimize everything to my advantage. I analyze complex investments as a profession. I find this type of work fun. It's just that sometimes it's optimal to be suboptimal. There's a cost to complexity. The game's payout has to be worth the time and effort of playing. Instead of prying a bit more from a rewards program, for example, I'd rather put my time into my family and business, each of which has a much bigger return on investment. I bumped into an old friend recently who mentioned that he too travels for work. Knowing that he's a senior partner at an actuary firm and has an analytical mind, I was eager to hear his strategy for airline frequent flyer status. He replied that he picks flights based on price and time with indifference to the airline. "What about status?" I asked him. "Not worth it," he replied. "The squeeze is not worth the juice." And we have one more. My marital clash over expiration dates. As the new year is here, a ritual has begun in my kitchen. We open the fridge and toss out everything that is past its best-by date, from cheese that was not finished during the holidays to pasta and hot sauces that have been sitting in our cupboard for months. Nothing old can stay. My wife, who leads the charge, asked if the olives we bought for Christmas and New Year's are still good. She is not interested in my opinion. After almost three decades of marriage, I can guarantee those tasty olives are going into the trash. "What about this expired raspberry tea you've been hiding behind the honey?" she asked, moving on to the cupboard. "Well, it's getting tossed. I'll buy more," she answers. "Buy more," I say. "This is starting to be a very expensive exercise." Don't get me wrong. I'm all about food safety. I would never eat expired dairy or meat. I always check the sell-by, freeze-by date before cooking. But I see no reason why a bottle of ketchup with a date of August 2025, which has been chilling in the fridge this whole time, still passes the sniff test and tastes okay, has to be thrown out. Ketchup has to be maroon before I will refuse to eat it. now onto the freezer, and I say something like, "Oh, that's fine. It's only a chocolate Easter bunny." My wife's eyes roll, and into the trash it goes. On its website, the United States Department of Agriculture explains what is meant by the various dates on food labels. Best if used by / before date indicates when a product will be of the best flavor or quality. It is not a purchase or safety date. A sell-by date tells the store how long to display the product for sale for inventory management. It is not a safety date. A use-by date is the last date recommended for use of the product while at peak quality. It is not a safety date except when used on infant formula. A freeze-by date indicates when a product should be frozen to maintain peak quality. It is not a purchase or a safety date, all of which I find interesting and educational, especially that the sell-by date is used only for inventory purposes. In the meantime, though, I become sympathetic to my wife's point of view. I decide to start paying more attention so I know when food is at its freshest. After all, I do have fantasies of becoming a really good cook one day. But the old habits are hard to shake, which is why I find myself looking at that bottle of Worcestershire sauce that's been in the cupboard since at least 2019 and thinking, surely that's still good. That brings us to the end of today's articles. I'm Merrick Schneider, and I'll be back soon with more articles. Thank you for listening.